Like many people of our time, I have an autoimmune disorder. Nothing really serious, but it is the kind of disorder in which the body works against itself, perceiving incorrectly that there is an intruder in the body. The immune response of the body works against its own tissues and cells and molecules. In the body of religion, prophets have often been considered the autoimmune disorder of the institutional church and the religious elite. Prophets are part of the body. Comfortable people, the in-control people, see them as threatening the health of that body. Walter Brueggemann says of the prophets, "The prophets are imaginers, not predictors or social activists. People have been threatened by the poetry of the prophets, so they have acted to make them more manageable. But their number one characteristic is that they are not manageable." Nobody likes a prophet. A prophet challenges our comfort, especially if we are among the people considered to be the winners in society. Prophets do not make us comfortable. When the religious establishment began to see Jesus as a prophet in the mold of Isaiah and Jeremiah, they became very uneasy. They saw him as an intruder that threatened the body, and the body went to work against it. Jesus knew the danger in speaking of a new way of being, especially a new way of being with God. He didn't need to hear, "Herod wants to kill you." He knew he would be in trouble. He was questioning the existing power structure, and that is always a risky choice. But why are prophets seen as threats? It starts with a basic need of humanity. We go about all of the work and relationships in our human lives to fulfill the basic human need to search for an identity. Who are we? Who are we called to be? Jonathan Sacks, who has written a fabulous book called Not in God's Name, says this about our identity in our groups. Groups, like individuals, have a need for self-esteem, and they will interpret facts to confirm their sense of superiority. We hand on our genes as individuals, but we survive only in groups. We are led to Herod's place, a place of unease and physical and spiritual violence by our groupishness. Groupishness is especially dangerous when the group feeling threatened is in a position of power. One commentary says, "Nothing will more quickly alarm those on top in comfortable positions than the suggestion that they may not end up on top, but that some of those now relegated to the bottom, to last place, will ultimately be first." That is exactly what Jesus was doing. And in our human ways, after noticing of another group, "Those people are not like us," the next step is often to perceive them as a threat to the body. So when a prophet has the courage or recklessness to question the current system, those benefiting from that system want to destroy the intruder, the prophet. They see the work of the prophet as the body working against itself. So the danger is very real to anyone in any time who speaks God's uncomfortable truth. The prophecy of God, embodied in this man, Jesus, calls for lives and systems to transform. It calls for a society that no longer marginalizes, but brings together everyone into one healthy body. And that transformation is born of the radical and loving and equitable Spirit of God. This work, this ministry, calls the existing system into question. It is seen as an autoimmune disorder, where a man coming in the name of God threatens to upend the status quo of power in the church and outside it. So those who were already on top didn't want the system to change, and they reacted to Jesus as if he were an invader attacking the body. As human beings in groups, it is our nature to want not transformation, but scapegoats and enemies. Jonathan Sacks says we want people in those categories to deflect away internal violence that would otherwise destroy our group. We have seen this reaction to prophets throughout church history and modern history. Martin Luther was a prophet who tore apart the church with his questions, and he asked them, in the interest of making it more authentically about God. His namesake, Martin Luther King, also helped tear apart some churches by suggesting that discrimination on the basis of race has no place in a Christian institution. God is a God of mercy and forgiveness. But we are inconsistent at best and hypocritical at worst in our pursuit with God. In the covenant made between God and God's people, only God will be faithful. If you listen to that story in Genesis, only the fire passed between those two rows of pieces. Only the fire went through. Abram didn't, because Abram was being asked to do something that human beings simply can't do. We're inconsistent, and we're fearful, and we cannot hold up our end of the bargain. And sometimes, when we realize our own faithlessness, we become frustrated and we blame it on someone else's group. We find our identity in the status quo, and we react violently when the status quo is accused of being antithetical to the Spirit of God. Much violence, physical, emotional, and spiritual, has been wrought by human beings insisting they're doing God's will. Jonathan Sacks says, when religion turns men into murderers, God weeps. But isn't it our human instinct to resist or reject anything that makes us uncomfortable or threatens our way of life or our desires or our preferences? It is human nature. That is why we seek God together, to comfort each other, but also to make each other uncomfortable when God's truth needs to be spoken. When the body of society or institutionalized religion goes astray from the will of a loving God, we have to help one another. But we are human beings, fallen and fearful and flawed. So how do we speak God's truth in a culture that seems dead set against it? We listen to the discomfort brought to us by others. We ask if that discomfort is leading us to be more loving, kind, and accepting of others. And if it is, it is an uncomfortable truth of God. We think about other opinions. We ask ourselves honestly, do I seek points of view only from persons who will reinforce my own point of view? We seek the uncomfortable truth of God when we learn to be suspicious if our will and what we perceive as the will of God too often coincide. We examine motivation behind any human disruption. Is that disruption being made to assert power in religion, or is it to return more fully to our loving God? If it is about our own power, we have indeed become a disorder threatening the body. Jesus, in bringing the truth of God, was seen as a threat to the culture and to the religious. And we too will be seen as a threat when we utter God's truth. But if that truth is about returning to our loving God, we are actually the disruption that can make the body healthy again. Amen.